Blog Talk Radio.
Interesting birthdays today. In 1890, Charles Engine Wilson, the president of General Motors, later Secretary of Defense in President Eisenhower's cabinet. Wilson is best known for his statement, "What's good for General Motors is good for the country." Now, he got trashed for that, but what he meant was General Motors at that time was involved. They had five car lines: Buick, Cadillac, Chevy, Pontiac, General Motors trucks, GMC, and Chevy trucks, plus Delco, Remy, batteries. They were into everything, Frigidaire, refrigerators. They were a huge part of the economy. Plus, they had their politically incestuous business relationship with the DuPont Desnoyers Company, chemical company in Delaware. DuPont Desnoyers was set up by French Huguenots who came here after the St. Bartholomew's Day massacre, tormented by French Queen Catherine de' Medici, who was trying to wipe out the Protestants in France. Anyway, Wilson was trashed for that statement, but it's very accurate when you look at all the tentacles of General Motors and how that corporation has been pared down. Among the interesting other characters, Gene Lockhart, famous actor. He was also in the film, the Nazis. He played a traitor who was working at Oak Ridge, a nuclear facility developing the atomic bomb material for the atomic bomb. And he was one of the traitors who was giving information to the Nazis to help them build their bomb. He was a character actor in a lot of films. And then here's a Canadian Japanese ethnic, S.I. Samuel Ichiro Hayakawa, who was born in Vancouver, British Columbia, but he came to Chicago and worked for a black newspaper called the Chicago Defender. And he did not end up in the concentration camps that the rest of the Japanese ended up in. And Hayakawa later became president of San Francisco State University in 1968. I remember I was driving by and when they had the student riots there, and a brick came hurtling and nearly didn't break my windshield, but almost did. And later, Hayakawa, who wrote a famous book on semantics, later became a U.S. senator from California. And he would fall asleep in the Senate, and they call him Sleeping Sam. His son, he married a Caucasian woman. His son went to Reed College and, I believe, became a hippie. famous foreign minister, longtime survivor of all the purges in Russia, Andrei Gromyko, was born today. If you remember Ozzy and Harriet, the TV program, black and white program, well, Harriet Nelson, it's her birthday. Red Skelton, his birthday. Another Canadian actor, Hume Cronyn, and Jessica Tandy was his wife. They both played on Broadway and Shakespeare, I think, quite a few films and stage. And he was born in Ontario, Canada, and emigrated to the United States. And, of course, he's a longtime hero, black hero of South Africa. He had a law degree, Nelson Mandela. He spent 20 or 25 years on Robben Island, which is off the coast of South Africa. And he would not submit, and he later became president of South Africa. They now have problems there. The ANC, African National Congress, is riddled with corruption. I understand from someone who just came back from South Africa, I think it was Durban or Cape Town, he said there are gated communities there to keep the riffraff out. Even the wealthy blacks keep the other blacks out. The first Marine to go up in our satellite, John Glenn, went up in space. He later became a U.S. Senator from Ohio. Yevgeny Yevtushenko, the poet, was born today. Another writer, Hunter Thompson, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and quite a pothead or druggie, burned out. I think he committed suicide. James Brolin, an actor. And then those of us who remember the Motown sound, Martha and the Vandellas, was born today. Among the deaths today, our celebration, we commemorate, is Benito Juarez, the first president of Mexico during the time of Abraham Lincoln, as a matter of fact. And he helped defeat the French who were trying to, Louis Napoleon III was trying to set up an Austrian Duke, Maximilian or Maximiliano, as the king or emperor of Mexico. And Benito Juarez put the armies together and drove him out. Benito Juarez, there's a famous movie called Juarez, and it starred Paul Muni, who is the uncle or was the uncle of the conductor of the San Francisco Symphony, Michael Tilson Thomas or Tomaszewski. Their parents, his relatives, and Thomas's parents were the Tomaszewskis of the Yiddish Theater of New York. Raul Almison, who the family, after all the revolutions in Mexico, after Juarez died, a lot of upheavals, political upheavals, civil war, part of that family emigrated to the Philippines, which was also Spanish and long links. And Raul Almison was born there. He was the grandnephew of Benito Juarez. Also, Henry Cisneros, the former secretary of HUD in the Clinton administration, is also distantly related to Juarez and their cousins, Raul and Henry Cisneros. Raul's dead, and he was the lawyer who started the Steve Nary U.S. Navy sailor case. We'll get into that another day. Horatio Alger, who wrote all these books encouraging young men to strive and work hard, kind of like what Mitt Romney is talking about. That, in other words, you pull up your bootstraps and you get to work. And, of course, we have people, the radical left, the latte left, as I call them, leisure class, who are involved in nonprofits, some of them, have not only stolen the products, but stolen the nonprofits and co-opted them, ripped them off, made easy pickings out of them. They have stolen the bootstraps from poor people who they thought couldn't and wouldn't or didn't know how to fight back. A famous actor who was in Lawrence of Arabia, Jack Hawkins. He played the Marshal Allenby, and with Peter O'Toole, who was Lawrence. And then Carl Menninger was a famous psychiatrist, started the Menninger Clinic. I did promise to play the, you know, also in this state, among the events, well, we'll get to the events. Everybody blames Nero in the year 64 AD. There was the Great Fire in Rome, the first great urban renewal project, as some cynic remarked. And Nero got blamed while he was playing his fiddle. You want to see the classic film, see the Nero with Peter Ustinov, who incidentally, his grandmother was Ethiopian. Anyway, Peter Ustinov played Nero, and he was playing his lyre while Rome was burning. I don't know if that's accurate, though. And then in 1536, after Henry VIII split from the Roman Catholic Church and split with Rome, he finally decided that the Pope's authority would be void in England. So the English, who were, became part of the English Catholic Church or the Anglican Church, did not have to obey the Holy Father in Rome. In 1853, the first American international railroad was completed, called the Grand Trunk Line. It ran from Canada into the United States. It's largely in the east. In 1872, Britain installed the secret ballot for voting. Excuse me, I'm slave coal. 1914, United States Army started the air service. And then in 1932, the U.S. and Canada had a treaty to develop the St. Lawrence Seaway, and I will play right now of the American general, Philip Berrigan, who did the American side of the St. Lawrence Seaway.
I was in San Francisco, and I had 4 years to do, and I was living in this house, and I thought, I'm going to retire in San Francisco. And the chief called him up and said, listen, you got decorated by England, France, and Belgium. I have another international job. And I said, what is it? And he says, it's the Niagara Falls, really. And he says, it's a job with Canada. And I want you to go take over the division in Chicago. See, I had the division here that included districts in San Francisco. Now the divisions in Chicago included the Great Lakes, the district in Chicago and Buffalo, and another district up the north, in the
northeast.
Northwest, you know, kind of Lake Superior. And it was a very interesting job of remodeling Niagara Falls, the Canadians.
Were they easy to work with?
Oh, terrific. And we both had the same idea. You see, that the international boundary goes right through Niagara Falls. And the falls had all the water going, practically 85% of the water went through the middle quarter of the falls where the international boundary went across. And what we did was to both go on our side of the international boundary and flatten that. We sandbagged so we got away from the water, but we made the elevation of the edge of where the water would go as the same as the elevation in the middle of the horseshoe. So that we spread the thing out so that Niagara Falls is maybe instead of a quarter of a mile in the middle of the falls, it was 2 or 3 miles long. And that particularly made it very pretty, beautiful. In other words, and we actually generated more power. In other words, we put more power to the powerhouse because all that water is going through the middle of the falls. And for the show, you couldn't divert much more than they were diverting, whereas if you spread it out to a little bit of water, maybe only 6 inches of water going over the edge, and then diverting more for power, making equal amount of power on the Canadian and the United States side. It was
so for once, everything got shared.
It had to be that way. In other words, it was very logical that we wanted it to be that way.
Now, if I can get on an environmental thing, Joe, the with the ships, foreign ships coming into through the St. Lawrence Seaway into the Great Lakes, they bring in bacteria and plant life that's not indigenous to the continental United States, and I understand the problems now. Could that have been avoided?
I think that's a problem.
Of course, we weren't that environmentally conscious then, were we?
Well, it wasn't our responsibility. That was something that was the public health department.
Mm-hmm. Because this is just starting to crop up in being from the Midwest myself, these Russian ships especially, they said brought in stuff that was not indigenous to the United States, and now they're concerned that these animals will get a foothold here. What did you do after the seaway?
Well, that was just an excerpt from over an hour-long interview with the late General Philip Berrigan, who's from, you can hear his Boston accent, you know, a lot of Boston politicians and the Kennedys and all. And, of course, he was the deputy general engineer at Normandy and had responsibility for the Mulberry Bridges, and we'll get into that another day. Among the other events today, talking about wars and generals, Francisco Franco, Generalissimo Franco, El Caído, he started the revolt against the Spanish Republican, and the Spanish Civil War started in 1936. That was the prelude to World War II, where the Germans sent a group of airmen called the Condor Legion, and they tested their bombing on Spanish cities and civilians, and their most notorious act of bombing was against the little city of Guernica and famous Pablo Picasso painting. Francisco Franco eventually won and drove the communists who were supported by the Russians and the Nazis and Mussolini and Texaco, in fact, advanced Franco gasoline for his tanks. And a lot of horrible battles and civil wars were always terrible, tearing a country apart. And he became the great dictator of Spain and punished those who were captured after the end of the Spanish Civil War. We'll get into him another day. A famous name in aviation history called Wrong Way Corrigan, Douglas was his first name, he had a flight plan, was supposed to fly from New York to California. Instead, he ended up in Ireland. So I don't know how he got away with that. And, of course, he was dubbed by the media as Wrong Way Corrigan. I don't know if he flew after that. talking about flying, in 1940, the first successful helicopter flew. 1942, the Germans, Willy Messerschmitt, developed the first jet plane, which flew. Thank God the Germans didn't get more of them up in the air, because they would have had a turkey shoot with our B-17 bombers. 1955, the first electricity was generated by using the atom. I think there was a plant in Dresden, Illinois, which incidentally was owned by Commonwealth Edison, whose president was the father of Bill Ayers. Very controversial. And in 1969, Mary Jo Kopechne and Senator Ted Kennedy plunged off the bridge in a car at Chappaquiddick. A lot of controversy about could he have saved Mary Jo, whom he was having an affair with. She may have even been pregnant. We don't know. A lot of controversy about that. That incident, and of course they're both dead. And in May of 1984, Democratic Convention was held here in San Francisco, and I covered it. One of the people who covered it for KLW and Western Public Radio. Mondale won the nomination. Feinstein tried to get the vice presidential nomination. She was the mayor at the time, and of course that famous slogan came up, where's the beef? Of course, now, of course, it's very relevant now because of all of this manipulation in the meat industry, where they come up with this merging pieces of meat together with a kind of plasticized adhesive, God knows what else. I did promise to find, and I had it here, I just had it under another label, the original version of Le Marseillais, and so here it is. It's been here all the time.
Yes, because avant-traité soufflé de officiel, version, not any arrangement. Right?
Original version conducted by the late great Pierre Monteux, who conducted the San Francisco Symphony, conducted many operas. He became a U.S. citizen in 1942, I think, and he lived to be almost 90, and he died, I think, in 1969, if I'm not mistaken. Among the other interesting developments, the Russians have learned about foreign so-called nonprofits or NGOs, non-government organizations, and they apparently are learning from the mistakes that we have made here in the United States, what I call easy pickings, where you have these very savvy, cunning, unscrupulous people setting up or infiltrating and co-opting existing nonprofit organizations and playing upon people's white guilt, especially some of these ethnics. And what's happening, the accountability is not in their vocabulary. And the FBI reluctantly did this, asked me to do a flowchart on these nonprofits who were in the affordable housing. Jack Anderson wrote a little squib about me in one of his columns, and it'll be up on one of the Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmiCusVeritas. All these cities and states are bitching about budget shortfalls, even bankruptcies, and here the bicycles are an untapped revenue source for both local and state governments. They're not taxed. The bicyclists don't pay for a license. They don't pay for all these special bike lanes and these other facilities that are set up for them. It's estimated that about $3 billion has been spent so far on these special accommodations for bicyclists, whether they're bicycle lanes and signs and all that. And among the things that most Americans don't know, some people have been asking, where are all these bicycles manufactured? They're not being manufactured by Swin in, I think, Milwaukee. In fact, in high school, I repaired bikes and modified racers for my tuition for my first year in boarding school. Had to pay for some of that. Anyway, 93%, it's estimated, of the bicycles ridden here in the United States come from Red China. About 7% come from Taiwan. So, you know, this is, and in a way, Chinese, we used to laugh at them for riding all their bicycles and calling it a coolie economy. Well, it looks like some of the leftists and the Agenda 21 people want to turn the American economy into a coolie economy with their agenda. Bicycles do not, as a rule, contribute to the economy. other than the bicycle messengers and people who are in the business of selling bikes and repairing them. But you can't get an ambulance, turn a bicycle into an ambulance. You can't turn a bicycle into a taxi. You can't turn a bicycle into a delivery truck. And you can't delivering, whether it's food or gasoline, whatever. Their bicycles have their use at the beach, in the parks, closing some streets on Sunday and weekends, some of the parks. But for them to become the major source mode of transportation is utterly ridiculous, especially in a city like San Francisco, where the topography is not like Amsterdam or Copenhagen. We're a city of hills, and there are other difficult terrain for bicyclists. And of course, not everybody can be Lance Armstrong, which, incidentally, in the Lance Armstrong case, they are now accusing him of taking illegal enhancements, which enabled him to win all those races. He was also instrumental, as was one of the face people in the anti-smoking campaign to discourage people from buying cigarettes by imposing more taxes on them, on cigarette smokers. So I understand that the cigarette tax proposal lost, and they're not talking about it, but they may be back. These people don't give up. And another, we'll be doing more on the Sandusky case. Like if he had been in San Francisco, he'd probably be working for the San Francisco Unified School District. He just might have gotten away with his molestation of young children, young boys. Another interesting fact that the media ignores was two of them, that young military recruits have not only been molested by civilian males, they have been drugged, mugged, mutilated, and horribly murdered. The Randy Kraft case happened here in California. We also had the Juan Pifere case, which is still going on. It's probably the most censored case on the federal docket, and we'll get more into that, how when the poor U.S. Navy sailor filed his removal case to federal court, how it was altered. And it happened all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and that's a question that people should be asking themselves, especially in the light of this controversial U.S. Supreme Court decision on Obamacare. What role, if any, do the clerks have in deciding these cases? There was a scandal in Seattle in the Ninth Circuit also, which is also in the Ninth Circuit. And I worked in a courthouse in the Seventh Circuit in Chicago, and I was familiar with a lot of the judges' procedures and all of that. So we'll be talking more about that. We'll be back Friday, and we're transferring some of our tapes to CD. And it's a big job, over 1,500 interviews plus current ones I've been doing. And also recommend you go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmicusVeritas, and go to our blog. And an easy way to access it would be verzola.com, verzola.com. And we'll end with our favorite. Maybe some of these politicians should be playing politics and poker.
Say, Ben, want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you
going
to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's your plan?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
Why are you thinking of Jack B or Jack Y?
I say, neither one. I never even met him.
I say, when you got a pair of Jack, bet up.
Well, we don't have a pair of Jacks, although I don't think that's the name of a prospective vice presidential candidate. We'll be back Friday, July 20th at 4 p.m. And again, go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmicusVeritas. Good night.